Aaron, it's Marco Collins. I'm on my way up to do your little podcast, and I'm taking the bus up. I had no flipping idea. You're a I thought you told me Ballard. That's like north, 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 north Ballard. It's like Shoreline. That's like fucking Everett. Vancouver, Alaska. Anyway, I'm probably going to be late because I'm sitting here waiting on Aurora Avenue, fucking looking like a hooker. Fuck, maybe I'll make a couple dollars out here while I'm fucking waiting for the bus. Dude, killing me. All right, you have permission to use this.
Well, hello and welcome, everyone.
Oh, hey.
Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 103.
Woo!
In what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series.
I'm not joking around here.
I am your host, Aaron Roden.
I will eat your babies, bitch!
And this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you so much for joining us this week. Wow, amazing night last night. Had an amazing, amazing night. Met a lot of people who listened to the show. We had that mega awesome, stupendous listener party last night at the Naked City Brewery and Tap House, and we had a fantastic time. Had a fantastic time. A lot of you came out there. It was great to meet some of you. We sold some shirts, gave away some posters, signed some autographs, which was kind of weird. Mairead was there. She signed some autographs too, which she felt really super weird about. And and then we just proceeded to get very, very blotto. We ended up going across the street to this place called the Baranoff. If you're not familiar with the Greenwood neighborhood, there's a series of bars on Greenwood Avenue. And this place called the Baranoff is somewhat famous for their Jell-O shots. And they sell them for about $2 a pop. And now on top of what we found out last night, on top of having just straight up plain Jell-O shots, they have these syringes filled with Jell-O now that you can buy for $4, and they just squirt it straight into your mouth. So basically, the Baranoff is now Senior Frogs in Mazatlan, except it's here in the Greenwood neighborhood of Seattle. So we ended up having a fantastic time. Thank you all who came out, and sorry that some of you couldn't make it. Of course, some of you who do not live in Washington, we're not there, and we said a little, you know, we didn't say anything to tell you the truth, but we did have a moment of silence for you. If you can't tell, I'm a little bit hungover. Of course, you know what's new? Nothing. That's kind of always the case, isn't it? Yeah, and I'm super sorry about that. To open up the show, you heard Mr. Marco Collins called our voicemail line. He was obviously a little mixed up, confused about where I lived, and it was super humid. We recorded this episode yesterday. It was super humid yesterday, and Marco had to get on the bus, come up north to the Greenwood neighborhood and record the show with us. And he was such a treat. He's the sweetest dude. So hopefully you got the joke there. He wasn't mad, but he did. He called our voicemail line, which you guys can do as well. I always kind of forget to plug that. We get a few voicemails from now and again, not many. But the number, if you guys would like to call us and leave something funny, or you know, just tell us what you think of the show, we might use it for the intro there. The number is 609-232-BOOM. That's 609 232-BOOM, and you can call us up on that, leave a voicemail, tell us what you think of the show, you know, whatever. Tell us what's on your mind. That'll work too, right? Yeah. Episode 103 with Mr. Marco Collins. Now, this guy, okay, a little bit of backstory. Seattle, of course, was famous back in the 90s for its alternative music scene. Bands like Soundgarden, Nirvana, who else? Mudhoney, of course. A bunch of bands got really big back in the 90s here in town. And we were known for this booming music scene that everybody wanted to get in on, right? Well, Marco Collins was kind of at the center of that. Back in 1991, he was sent up to Seattle to start this local radio station called The End, 107.7 The End. He was the young guy that was going to move in here and create this amazing radio station. Well, it was amazing for the first, 7 years of its existence before... We got into the whole Limp Bizkit episode of all of our lives. It was a groundbreaking station at the time. And Marco Collins was the music director when that station started in 1991. And I remember hearing that station the first day it was on the air. And me and some buddies were listening. We just happened to find this thing, and it kept on going. It was just, there was no DJs at that, on the first day. There was nothing. It was just like, I don't think there were any ads either. And it was just a voice that would come on and say, "The end is coming." And nobody knew what it was, but they were playing amazing music. They were playing, Mudhoney and Nirvana and all these bands that we were really into at the time. And so it was kind of this really cool thing. So anyway, Marco Collins, man. Fucking legendary DJ, especially around these parts. He also is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for being said DJ back in the 90s. And right now, he doesn't say this on the air, and he did give me permission to say this in the intro. They are working on a documentary on him. Yeah. So put that in your pipe and smoke it. It's going to be great. This guy has his fingers in a lot of things here in town. Namely, right now he works for Slacker Radio on the internet, and also this new internet radio station here in Seattle called Jet City Stream, which is really cool. You guys should check it out, jetcitystream.com. So, and that's an all music station and stuff, and they play some great things. So yeah, let's just do that. Let's get to it, shall we? Shall we? I'm just gonna stop talking. Oh, one thing I do want to say before we get to our first musical break here: we do have shirts and we do have posters. So if you would like to order one, we've got a few shirts left. We sold a bunch last night, which was just fantastic. And thank you guys if you bought one last night. Thank you so much. That really helps out. But yeah, we do have shirts. We're selling those for $15 a pop, and the posters are $5. Now, I do have, I think we've got pictures of those up on our Facebook page. We don't have anything up on the actual website at air-raid.net, but we are working on that momentarily. But if you would like a t-shirt or a poster, please contact me, Aaron, at air-raid.net, and put merchandise or, t-shirt, poster in the subject heading. Okay, let's get to it, shall we? Let's see. We're going to be featuring music today from one of my favorite bands from the 90s, Mudhoney. Of course, here from Seattle. This song is called Let It Slide. And when we return with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears, we will be joined by Mr. Marco Collins here in Dining Room Studios in Greenwood. Greenwood, not Ballard. Ballard, Marco. Man. Anyway, it's a great conversation. Stick around. We've got more for you. This is Mudhoney. Let It Slide. We'll be back in just a moment. Yeah. All right, we are back. Joining me here in Dining Room Studios is Marco Collins, who has a huge, huge problem with Foursquare and most other social media outlets.
Don't get me wrong. I love social media. I'm completely all over most social media outlets.
Yeah, you're a good Facebooker. You're a good Facebooker.
I am into the Foursquare.
Okay, please just explain
this
to me. It's
just bullshit,
really quick.
Dude. Why do you Foursquare? Okay, so I was on Foursquare for a while. Yeah. Look at me. I'm at the airport. Oh, I'm at the gas station. I'm at 7-Eleven. Oh, I'm the mayor of the dry cleaners. Who gives a shit?
Here's the thing you need to explain to me. Like, you do actually get, like, you get awards for, like, going to places way too many times, right?
Yeah, you can be the mayor of a place. And if you're the mayor of a place, you get half-off donuts, half-off the day-old donuts.
Oh, there's actually, like, there's actually, like, rewards.
Some businesses actually give rewards. So at that point, yeah, I guess it's worth it to check into a effing place 17 times.
You can swear on this,
okay,
by
it's so... Yeah. Fucking stupid. And a friend of mine, here's the thing that kills me. A friend of mine is a pretty powerful guy in the music business, and he's a smart guy. He's got a lot of opinions. He has an opinion, and all he does on Facebook is check into fucking Foursquare places. I'm like, dude, you can add a comment
to
Foursquare.
Put some of your thoughts down to this.
Just arrived in New York City to see my band play this show at the, you know, wherever, dude. It's like, add a little bit. I'm so excited, but I'm nervous because the singer broke his leg. Whatever it is, add a little something. Not just here I am at the airport. Here I am at a restaurant.
I'm now the mayor of the airport.
Fuck that shit. Yeah, there's no benefits from that. There are absolutely no perks from being the mayor at the airport.
I love this. You're very worked up right now. Was it because of your walk over here?
Yes, it's because you told me you lived in Ballard.
I did not tell you I live in Ballard.
And I came up to, like, you live in Everett. The bus ride to Everett is fucking far. It's my Saturday, so 3 hours of travel time to do this goddamn podcast.
Why don't you have a car?
I've not had a car since I moved back here. You're a grown man. I am a grown man.
Wait a minute. Where did you go?
Well, when I left Seattle, back in 98. I went to L.A., New York, Miami, San Francisco, San Diego, Sacramento.
You just looking for yourself? You searching for something?
Yeah. Were you searching for something? Yeah, it's been a lost decade. It's funny. Clearly. And I still haven't found it. That's why I'm up in Everett at your fucking house doing a podcast.
This is Greenwood, sir. I'll have you know. Still in Seattle proper.
Let me check in at Foursquare real quick.
Yeah. See what Foursquare has to say about it. Okay. To stick on the social media topic here. I have trouble sometimes, like with the Twitter. You got a Twitter account?
Yeah, I do.
You got a Twitter account. With Twitter and Facebook, sometimes, like, I'll just go into a dead period.
Me too.
You know, a couple days a week, I won't post anything. I won't look at it at all because my brain's just kind of numb from it, maybe.
Right. Well, and because you have a life. That's the thing. You have a real job. You have a wife. You have a child.
Right. You get overwhelmed
none of those
with
things.
But does that? Does that happen to you too? Do you go through all of a sudden? It's like your brain goes into shutdown. I've always wanted to ask John Roderick about that. If he goes through it, because I
don't think he does.
No,
I think he lives it. But I think at a certain point,
he lives Twitter.
Yeah, he does, and I love it. He's smart enough to hook his Twitter up to his Facebook.
So
he makes one comment, and it goes to both places.
It goes everywhere. Yeah.
And his comments are just genius. He doesn't attach pictures. He's smart enough that.
He doesn't do any hashtags.
No hashtag.
He did Obamacare.
The guy's a genius. So anything that comes out of his mouth, he can think in genius 140, character blurbs and make it genius. I love him. I think it's awesome you got him on the show and you had
Well, we actually talked about Twitter and he went through a period on Twitter where he was deliberately fitting them into 140 characters.
Oh, so he had to
each tweet
think
had
about
to
it.
Be 140 characters.
Yeah.
So he made an art of it.
Oh.
It was like a game.
He wanted
to
use up every single
space.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
that's
where you throw in the hashtags if you can't quite make it. It's very easy to use hashtags to get there. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was obsessed with Twitter. I didn't give a shit about Facebook. And right, right. So I worked really hard on my Twitter account, and now I have 35,000 followers. But at the time, the way I got that, I was working, I was doing radio in LA.
Yeah, yeah.
And my boss, Twitter had just really started, and we were kind of blowing up our station. I did middays, and we were trying to take on the almighty K-Rock. We were a new alternative station in Los Angeles. So, you know, my boss
was like, that's a tough job right there.
It is, but we beat them. Which
are
was
you serious?
Awesome. They have beat them numerous times.
Okay.
But in my day part, I was beating them.
Nice.
Which is awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, I was proud of that, especially because I did it from Seattle. I did my show, my midday show in LA from Seattle.
Oh,
wow. It was genius. It was one of my favorite things to do because I was working for Clear Channel. Clear Channel is the kind of company that, you know, pumps in, you know, other DJs from all
right,
over.
Right, right. You use infamous. An ISDN line or IDSN?
No. I actually voice tracked my show live.
Oh, okay.
So what I would do is I would go in, I'd get there an hour early, but I was there doing the show for the entire 4 hours. Uh-huh. It's not like I went in and cranked out a 4-hour show in an hour.
Right,
basically,
right.
I would react to whatever was going on at that moment. I had a producer down in LA. We had a constant phone line open. Now, it cost a lot of money for an ISDN line, and maintaining that ISDN line, they weren't willing to do that for my midday show.
Right.
But I would go, I had my own little studio I worked in, and I'd call my producer, and sort of his thing to do every morning when he got in is, I just want you to walk around the building. I want you to walk through the cubicles, the promotion cubicles, the sales cubicles, see who has confetti on their desk, see who has an old whiskey bottle that clearly they were drinking into the night, see who's, you know.
Use just, that as material.
Exactly. Whatever you can find in the place, I want to know about it before I go on the air. Even outside the place. So when you're coming to work,
notice
that Warner Brothers Records has a huge, you know, inflatable duck outside. Like, I want to be able to talk about things that are going on right there as if I were there.
Right.
And it paid off. So he would, you know, give me all this information.
But did you guys let it be known that you were recording
it? Oh, hell no.
From Seattle?
I pretended
like
that I was in LA.
Were...
Yeah, absolutely. I pretended like I was in LA.
You're a liar.
A total liar. Absolute effing liar. And it was genius. It was the most fun show.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, there was an earthquake down there in the middle of my show.
Yeah.
And it happened in the middle of my show.
Did you react to it?
Well, yeah. The producer had to leave the room. I mean,
right.
We were in a, you know, a building. It was a massive building in Burbank. So he had to bail. He's like, dude, I got to go. And I'm like, that's fine. Just let it go. No voice tracks. Pull every track that I've already recorded out.
Yeah,
because I am leaving the building as well. So anyway, he came back after like 40 minutes, and I popped back on. I'd already given him a couple tracks.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, did you guys feel that? Like, we weren't even going to leave the building until I looked out and saw everybody from Warner Brothers like empty out on the sidewalks. And I'm like, F this. I'm out of here. So sorry about that. We just had to put things in automation. You know, it was awesome, dude. And then the other part was, I love that.
You're literally just lying to people.
Absolutely. And I'll get back to my original topic about Twitter, how I built the Twitter following.
No, so, I like this, man.
Yeah, this is good, right? So, it was great fun. In fact, I remember my boss calling me one time saying, how did you know it was Matt's birthday? You know, I had my producer walk down to our promotion guy's office
and
had birthday shit all over his windows, and people had spray painted like with whipped cream and stuff all over. So I was like, happy birthday, dude, blah, 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 blah. I actually had him come into the studio. Here's something else I did that was fun is I would have people from the building stop by my show. So I'd have our promotion director come down to tell me about, okay, wait, we're going to do this rock star contest. What is this about, dude? Tell me what's going on. You know, but what I would do
And so they would stop in. They would stop. They'd be down in L.A.
L.A. Booth. He'd have you know, a little recording system down there just for their voice. And I would just be on the phone. So we'd both be on our mics recording our pieces. So everything would be timed at the right moment. And then the producer would just interlay them. So we were in the same room.
Right.
It was just genius. I love doing that shit.
Oh, my God.
It was awesome.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But just, you know, that kind of thing, I think, makes it real. Like, I took the time.
Well,
I went through the LA Weekly. You know, I would go through the Weekly. I'd go through the LA Times. I'd go to the entertainment section.
Yeah.
You know, when there was the no hate rallies, I was on the air talking about them. When the Iran thing was going on, I actually put a woman that was talking about, you know, the she was a part of it. There was an Iranian rock group that had relocated to Los Angeles, and they didn't know where their families were when the riots were going on in Iran.
Yeah.
And so I actually put her on the air, and we talked about all those things because it was very timely, and there was also going to be a big march with all the Iranian people that had, you know, moved to LA. There was a big march in just at the same time they were doing the marches over there.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was great, man. And I felt like what I was doing, yeah, I was lying. Yeah, I'm up here in Seattle. But I did enough research and homework to make it feel very Los Angeles.
Well, here's the thing about radio, which I have found out just by kind of doing this podcast and meeting guys like yourself that have been in this business for a long time and worked in it professionally, is that radio is entertainment. It's the entertainment biz. You know, it's just a different section of the entertainment business, you know? And like it's just endlessly the more I learn about it, the more fascinated I become by it.
Yeah.
Because it's like this is what people listen to through their day. Like this is your radio shows, and they were for me growing up. I'm a bit younger than you are, and I listened to the 107.7 The End the first day that it came on the air.
Yeah.
The end is coming.
Right.
You know? Like all throughout the first day of, it would just go, no commercials. It would just go straight into another Mudhoney or a Seaweed song, you know? And I was just like, as a kid, I was just like fascinated by this.
You know what's great about this?
This is the best fucking thing ever.
This is what I love about the end. Everybody remembers it as being 10 times cooler than it actually was. And that's it. Trust me.
Well, the first day was awesome.
I guarantee you we did not play Seaweed.
You didn't play Seaweed?
No way. Not our first day. No way. We did play Mudhoney because that's what we knew.
Right, right.
But there was no Seaweed.
No
on there,
Seaweed?
Not for a while.
Okay.
No. But no, here's the funny thing. Even I remember it as, you know, better than it actually was.
Right, right.
You know, and it's, it was an amazing time for radio and for music, but, you know, it was never half as cool as people remember it being, dude.
Well, that's the thing with, it's the same thing as whenever I go back and watch a movie from the 1980s
I was really into.
You know? It's like, fuck, this is terrible. Right. The acting is horrible.
Right.
Everything about this movie sucks. The plot is falling apart at the seams. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay, let's see. Let's do this. Let's talk a bit about how you got started in radio first.
Okay.
Go back to the start.
Wow. So I was in high school. Well, first of all, I would have to go even further back. I was just a big fan of radio. Like growing up, I taped shows all the time and I listened to shows and I listened to Top 40 radio out of San Francisco. And that was just it. That's how I got turned on to everything. But I loved the idea. I loved...
Like music, talk?
No, music. Music. Okay. Like Top 40.
Yeah.
And a station called KFRC. And I listened all the time because it was just all the new Top 40 songs, you know? It would be like listening to Cube or any of these Top 40 stations that are going on up here.
Right, right.
So I did that all the time. I used to tape them. I'd listen to the countdowns. I'd, they would air an entire album. I would tape that album. I used to write the radio stations all the time. I was kind of one of those kids that was just very into it. And then I got a little bit older. So my junior year of school, I discovered punk rock. I had a girlfriend that came back from San Francisco. I'm from Northern California. And she had gone down and found punk rock. She had learned how to cut hair, bleach hair. You know, she became a beautician, as it were, for punk rock, for punk rock kids. Yeah. So she came back up and introduced me to all this music. And, you know, all of a sudden I was listening to all this different stuff.
And what year are we talking about here?
82, 81 82? And 82. Okay. Yeah. And there was a little tiny community station up in the middle of Northern California called KVMR. And it was in the middle of Nevada City. And it was a community sort of thing. It had, I don't think it was an NPR affiliate, but it definitely was very community oriented. And
right,
you could get your own show. You had to take a class You know, you had to do this
whole
thing.
How to run the board or something like that.
How to run the board and just the different FCC laws. You had to get your license. You had to do the, you know, all of this stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then you sort of had to wait in a queue to get there, you know, to get your own slot.
Yeah.
But we found a punk rock show on the station. My friends and I, that was, I think it was probably midnight to 6 a.m.
Yeah.
And it was genius. I mean, this show shaped me as a DJ just through and through.
Yeah.
We used to so there were 8-tracks in those days. So what we used to do is just tape that show. I can't remember what the show was called, but the DJ was named Sydney Snide. That's what she called herself.
Sydney Snide.
Sydney Snide. She'd get on
the
air.
So punk rock.
Oh, dude, she would. Oh, it was the best. When you're in high school and you're 15 years old, 16 years old, it's like in the middle of the mountains, and all we had was classic fucking rock.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I was like a kid with long hair, and I was.
You were like, you lived Pump Up the Volume, man. You were
kind of, yeah, kind of. So
just talk hard.
So listening to this thing, it was genius, and it only ran one time a week, and it was like on a Friday night. So I would stay up, record the whole thing, plug a new 8-track in, record it again, and then we trade those 8-tracks all week, and we get used to all of these songs, and it turned me on to. I remember hearing Susie and the Banshees for the first time, the Germs, the Avengers, Dead Kennedys, the Clash, Adolescence, X. I mean, it just went on and on and on. British UK punk, American punk. And I loved it, but it also was her attitude throughout the whole thing. Because she'd come on, she'd be like, and she had this Sydney Snide. It was perfect punk rock name. It was like, I'm just walking here to go to work today, and the cops stopped me, and they were just giving me a hassle because of the way I looked. So this is for you. Like, and she'd play Nazi
meanwhile,
punks.
She's probably like a librarian. Yeah,
exactly. But I imagine that she was like just this punk rock edgy.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like, it was genius. She turned me on to so much music. And I have no idea where she is or what her real name was.
Uh-huh.
But she totally changed my life.
Yeah.
And so then I decided I want my own show up on that thing. There's no reason I can't do it too.
Yeah.
But my mom wouldn't let me borrow the car to drive up there, which because it was far and it was on kind of a windy. People got killed on these roads, you know, because the only thing to do in Northern California is drink.
Mm-hmm.
It's boring as hell, dude. So it's like you don't have the beach. You just have rivers and lakes and alcohol as kids.
Yeah.
So a lot of people died. You know, that's what you do is you party. And so my mom didn't want me going up there. I took the class. I did one show where I kind of sat in with somebody else. But I brought a stack of my own records and things that I wanted to play. But that got me into it. That was really my thing. And that sort of got the bug going. Just going there, you know, hanging out in the studio, the mic goes on. There's sort of a magic that happens in that moment where the rest of the world, like, you know, you're on stage at that moment.
Yeah.
And then I went to college in San Diego and got involved with the college radio station down there and was music director of our college station. And that was a blast. I learned a lot doing that. And then I was working at a video store.
What college? Were
San Diego
going to?
State.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And I worked at the station there was called KCR, and it was a blast. I learned a lot there too. But
you start doing
the overnights, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And I wanted to do college radio, where I went to school, over in Ellensburg Central.
Oh, okay.
And I went to, you know, kind of the orientation thing for it and stuff. And then once they started talking about how, you know, you'd have to come in, because all the newbies would get like the shit hours, you know, it's like 3 a.m.
To 6 a.m.
5 or 6, you know, and it's just like, I'm not going to do that. Like, you know?
Now, see, that
so I
was
just kind of
difference.
Gave up even before I started, but I should have totally stuck with it.
Yeah, that was the thing with me is I didn't care. I was like, I'll do that. I'll do that forever.
You're gung ho
about that. Yeah.
And
it was like one of those things where I was working there and I was working in a video store near the university. And the commercial station in town, which was a pretty damn progressive commercial station called 91X. And everybody listened to that station down there. And even though I thought that I was cooler than that station. You know, I thought that, oh, God, I'm so above. I'm way more indie, way more cool than commercial
I've got so much more cred than these guys.
These guys friggin' suck. They don't know what's going on.
I listened to Sidney Snide.
Right, right. Well, I worked at the college station, even better. Right. Like, I'm the music director over there. So anyway, but there was one show that I listened to on that station. It was a show called Listen to This, and it was a new music show. And they just, I remember them having Daniel Ash on when Love and Rockets blew up and just all these bands that I was like, wow, okay, this show is cool. I'm listening to this show. And then I sort of wasn't, again, that kid, that geeky kid. Even though I was doing the college radio thing, I was still calling that station all the time.
Requesting
making
stuff.
Requests and saying, oh, well, you guys should have this. You know, I've got this at my college station. And then I remember, I was just like one of those kids. And one day they came to me at my video store. Mm-hmm. One of the girls that worked over there and said, hey, we need somebody to answered telephones for the Listen to This show. The show that I had, like, that was the only show, and it was on commercial radio. Yeah. And I was like, oh, fuck yeah, I'll do it. And the reason she asked me is because I look like a freak. Like, I had dyed black hair.
Yeah.
That was crimped, and eyeliner, and face makeup. And I was a full goth. Like,
are there pictures? Are there pictures of this?
One on my Facebook site.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
It's full on Robert Smith. Like,
whoa.
That's what I was doing.
Whoa,
in college, that's what I was doing. It was a blast. Yeah. And I had a blast. We'd cruise around on scooters and go to shows and do lots of drugs. And it was a good time. So anyway, I got this job just because of the way I looked.
Because they
didn't want like a mainstream kid answering
the
phone for this
show.
Right,
they want somebody with cred.
With cred, because this show had cred. So I remember going into the commercial station to interview for this job.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd walk down the hall and people would go, boo. Like, as I walked down the hall, and I'm like, all right, I can take this. I've got a sense of humor. I can take this.
I want this
fucking job. So I met with them, and they gave me the job instantly. And then
that's fantastic.
Therein started my, I started answering phones for that show, just answering the request lines. And at the time, the station broadcast out of Mexico. So they had to drive to Mexico, and they couldn't answer the phones. For whatever reason, I had to call them with the requests every 10 minutes and tell them what they were and, like, the name of the person that requested it and where they were calling from. And then finally, they gave me my own little local music segment. So I started doing this little segment that
I produced. Cool, like a five-minute little thing
one
or something
song
like that?
And little interview with a band. But
cool,
I was like,
cool.
That's kind of what I had done on the commercial radio side.
Right,
so I had
right.
met all these people over there.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, this is what I want. And, you know, and it was called Loudspeaker, my little segment. And I found a little sound effect that went, loudspeaker, loudspeaker. You know, and it was just, it was great. It was awesome because I would have bands come in and I'd interview them, and then I cut it up. It was all reel-to-reel tape. So it was razor blades and grease pencils, and you'd cut it up and put it on a cart and send it down to Mexico, you know, and I'd do it every week. Then they gave me two. Then they gave me an hour show. Then they extended the show to a two-hour show. Then I had bands playing live in the studio, just grew and
grew. It just kind of grew and grew over the years, huh? Yeah.
And it was
amazing. How long were you there? How long was that?
This goes back to the having to be willing to work for a long time for nothing, dude. I started at 91X in 1986, 85. I worked there basically 5 years.
Okay.
Making nothing.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like,
well, this
slave
is a good,
in a way.
This is a good spot to take our second musical break. We're going to be featuring music from one of my favorite bands of all time, Mudhoney. And this is one of the bands that I know for a fact that I heard on 107.7 The End. Maybe not Seaweed, okay? You know, Marco's probably right.
Seaweed
he was
came
a DJ
later.
There. But this is Mudhoney. This is one of my favorite songs by them. It's called Acetone. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears with special guest today, Marco Collins. This is Acetone. We'll be right back.
Acetone.
Is a go. All right, we are back with special guests today. Joining me here in Dining Room Studios, high atop the Greenwood neighborhood.
Yeah.
Otherwise known as
Everett.
Everett.
Hell.
With special guests.
Didn't the Comcast
place Marco
just,
Collins.
I think I returned a cable box right over here one
you
day.
You did, yeah. It was probably right across the way over there. But on
it's
a
actually
nice
a nice bus ride, dude.
358 is a nice bus ride.
It's kind of nice. I thought it was nice.
That is like the smelliest, like just
the people you mean?
Bus. Oh yeah. The people on that bus are just
not when you work at the Old Rainier Brewery, dude. Trust me, there's something going on out there in Georgetown.
I get on those
buses. Like when I get off work at 7 o'clock, my show ends at 7, so I catch the bus at like 7:07, and I get on that thing. Everybody's drunk. Everybody's drunk and drinking on the bus.
Yeah.
Like the whole back of the bus is nothing but just like there was one guy the other day whose like suitcase spilled all over the back of the bus.
Yeah.
And he just had a 40 in his hand, passed out, like spread out, and his shit was everywhere, dude. I'm just like, this is amazing. So I was taking pictures.
Man.
Yeah. Put them up on Foursquare.
I'm on the bus. I'm the mayor
just
of the
checking.
Bus.
I'm the mayor of the. Yeah. Exactly.
Next time I come in here, I get a free face mask so I don't have to smell vomit.
God.
Those are the best times when you get on the bus and it just reeks of vomit. That's just the best.
There's some gnarly stuff that's happened to me on the bus. But then again, I saw Macklemore on the bus the other day.
Did you really? Oh, I saw that. I saw your Facebook post on that one. Yeah,
it's kind of a trip. And he was sitting there just being like riding the bus.
Yeah.
But he was in the front. Who sits in the front of the bus, Macklemore?
Because he's
certainly
cool,
not
man.
The
he,
cool kids. No, the cool
he's
kids.
He's creating the trends.
Oh, I see.
See?
So
he's changing
breaking
it up.
The rules.
Right.
He's so cool that he doesn't have to sit in the back of the bus anymore.
Right.
He's changing things by sitting in the front.
Exactly.
Huh.
And he's bringing Friendster back. I don't know if you've heard
Friendster.
That.
I actually tried to do that a couple of years ago because I still have my account. I sent out a bunch of invites to people.
Yeah. And to Friendster?
Nobody got it, dude. People were like, dude, are you serious, Friendster? Are you real? And nobody had a sense of humor
about
it.
See, that's the funniest shit. You can send me that stuff all the time,
good.
Marco. I'll laugh
And you'll
at
get it.
It. I'll
good.
Get it.
All
I'll
right.
get it.
John Roderick would get it.
Okay, here's the thing. Here's the thing, John. I replied to one of his tweets the other day. He was saying how he was at the baseball field with Gibstack and all these Seattle guys.
Yeah.
And I replied to his tweet as a joke because I thought we were cool. I said, whoops. John, I think you dropped a name back there.
Oh, yeah.
And he wrote back pretty promptly. Sometimes it's nice to, recognize somebody for their good work.
What?
And I was like, oh, man.
He sent you like a straight response?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was like, shit.
Wow. That sucks.
He's not coming on the show again.
That's kind of funny, dude. That's funny.
So I sent him an apology.
What?
Yeah. I said I did.
Bigger pussy move.
Was it?
You apologized to John
Roderick? Man, I got 150 followers on Facebook. What am I going to do? Come on. And that guy's, like you said earlier, that guy's a genius.
Here's
he just
what you need. You
ground.
Need a private Coldplay show. That the only place, that's how I got 35,000 followers, dude, is my radio station in L.A. didn't understand that. I mean, Twitter was just getting going. So they, you know, were like, oh, you have a Twitter account. So here's what we're going to do. If people follow you on Twitter, that's how you'll...
At Air Raid Net.
What'd you say?
At Air Raid Net.
Okay.
I'm just putting it out there.
I like that. Just inserting that in the middle of a conversation.
Yeah.
If they follow you on Twitter, they can get into our private Coldplay show. And I'm thinking,
oh, shut up.
I swear to God, dude. I swear to God. And I'm sitting there thinking... Why wouldn't they start their own damn Twitter? Why are they building my Twitter account? I mean, they did. Yeah. And it was awesome. People had to follow me on Twitter.
That's rad.
Los Angeles folks had to follow me on Twitter to be able to win Coldplay tickets, dude. It was awesome.
That's fantastic.
That's all you need is
that's
a Coldplay
fantastic.
Show. Yeah.
I'm going to maybe we'll, yeah,
I think
we'll
you
work
should
on
lie. I think you should lie and say you have one.
If you want to get in on this, Coldplay show that's coming up tomorrow.
Yep.
At the crosswalk
at Air Raid
ground Greenwood.
What is it at Air Raid dot Everett dot? What is it?
Air Raid Net. Air Raid Net. Okay, yeah, there we go. There we go. Okay, Marco, let's get back on track here.
Yes.
Buddy. Quit talking.
So then, wait.
No, okay. I wanted to. Let's jump forward a little bit.
All right. Go on.
Let's jump forward here a little bit. And how did you eventually end up in Seattle? What was What year did you finally land here?
Well, when I was in San Diego doing the show that I mentioned earlier, I had a moment where I got booted off the air for a month. I got suspended for a month for playing stuff on the air
that
was
you
inappropriate. Well, I did a show. My show was like, I'm trying to remember if it was like 11 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
It was late on a Sunday night. So
right.
The way I looked at it, anything that happened after midnight
was
a free-for-all. And so I did a feature on anti-censorship. And it was at a time that the NEA had denied funding to like six different artists because their art was too radical. And so I had one of the artists on. Her name was Karen Finley. I don't know if you're familiar with her.
Mm-mm.
Performance artist. She's recorded with Lydia Lunch. She's recorded with Sinead O'Connor. But she's a performance artist that was infamous for putting yams in her butt live.
Okay.
And smearing stuff all over her naked body, eating chocolate pudding out of her partner's. She would dress as Eva Braun. Her partner would dress as Hitler. And she would eat chocolate pudding out of his crack live on stage. And it was just... She pushed the boundaries artistically. So it was like
favorite
episode
so far. This is amazing.
So I loved this woman. I loved her. I loved her. I loved her spoken word stuff. I loved her books. We became friends over the years. So I had her on my show.
Yeah.
I had a woman named Diamanda Galas on my show, who was sort of this demonic opera singer from San Diego.
Were the yams cooked?
I don't recall. I just recall... I caught her after the yam period.
Okay.
So the yam period
was
her big.
A yam,
yeah, there was a yam period. She was always naked on stage, and it was always like covering her body with like broken eggs and yams. But there was the actual insertion of the yams that I think got the funding from the National Endowment of the Arts pulled. So anyway, so I had these two people on my show. It was a genius show. And at the time also, the Two Live Crew, the whole thing about Two Live Crew was going on.
Yeah, okay.
So
okay.
I decided.
Had them on the show too?
No.
Or are you just playing their music?
Well, I played their music.
Yeah.
Unedited. And apparently there was somebody driving home that heard it, a sheriff and his kid. So they had to suspend me for a month to show in case there were any FCC, any kind of fines that came, they had to show that they had taken action.
Yeah.
So they let me go for like a month. And in that time, I got a job working for a record label in L.A. So I went to work for a label called Relativity Records up in L.A.
Okay.
Took off, moved to Santa Monica, was there for 8 months. And that same station, 91X, called me and said, hey, by the way, we're starting a brand new radio station in Seattle. We want you to be the music director and the night guy. And I'm like, really? You just let me go for a month for playing the Ghetto Boys on the air?
Yeah,
or no,
yeah.
It wasn't Two Live Crew. It was the Ghetto Boys.
Ghetto Boys.
Yeah, it wasn't
Two Live
Crew. Two Live Crew was before the Ghetto Boys. Yeah, it was the Ghetto Boys. So anyway, I was like, 2 weeks later, I was in Seattle. Living out of a hotel in Bellevue.
Really?
Yeah.
In Bellevue?
Yeah. That's
Bellevue,
corporate housing, something
tiny
over there.
Back then, too.
Yeah, it was just some corporate like housing place that I think I was in for like a month or three weeks or something until I got a place.
So what was your first at what year was that? That was must have been what, 92?
91.
91?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got here the day after the station signed on.
Okay.
So I wasn't here for the very first broadcast. I was here for the second day.
We found it. So my friends and I, we all grew up over on the Kitsap Peninsula in this small rural town over there.
Yeah.
And what my friend Kelly had just happened to find this on the dial, right? And so the first thing we hear is the end is coming.
Yeah.
And it's like they didn't have there was no DJs.
Right.
It's nothing. It was kind of like Jack FM almost, you know,
yeah.
What that is now. It's just this canned radio station that just, you know,
right.
Commercials and top 40 hits.
Yep.
Over and over and over.
What kind of music were they playing at that time?
What's
it was,
that?
It was KMGI. Is what it was, right?
On 107?
Yeah.
It
was KMGI. It was like easy listening, right?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what they were playing before, but the first day of broadcast on the end was, it was just that voice that like, the end is coming. And then they would, you know, they were playing Nirvana and Pearl Jam and
all that
stuff. I thought they were playing Seaweed, but apparently they weren't. But,
Seaweed came a little bit later.
Yeah, yeah. But so, I mean, I just had that was so like, what is this? What is this? You know, and they were playing the music that we were listening to.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a fantastic thing. And then it just kind of exploded a little bit.
It did.
You know?
Yeah.
And maybe I was thinking like, because you said in the kind of the towards the beginning of the show that a lot of people had this kind of this one memory of how the end was here in Seattle, especially when it started.
Not always accurate, but people have memories.
Not always accurate,
yeah.
But we all have fond memories of that station. Do you think you have different thoughts on it because you were in it? You were working there? You were inside the guts of the...
In fact, I tend to remember things a little bit more glamorous than they really were.
Really?
Also, no, it was an amazing time in my life.
You're just like snorting coke off the desk, and
I don't have to answer that, right? I don't.
Pleading the fifth.
it was an amazing time, you know. And I mean, there were some. It got crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It got crazy for sure. But I mean, it was just so everything felt like it was the best place I could have ever worked.
Right.
You know, it was when I started there, I started and my boss came in and my boss and I, it was a guy I'd never met before. It was my PD and he had never worked in the alternative format at all. But he and I, so they put us together for a reason that I was way out in left field and he was a little bit out in right field and we would either kill each other and it would never work or else we would balance each other out
and
it would work. And that's exactly what ended up happening.
Yeah.
We had a couple like blowouts, he and I was like, well, what the hell, dude? Why can't we play? You know, because I'm the music director. They've hired a college kid to come in here and that's all I had done was college radio and you know, the local music shows and the new music shows on a commercial alternative station. So to me, I didn't understand why you can't start a brand new massive radio station, you know, 100,000 watt radio station and not play cool indie bands. It didn't make sense to me. I didn't understand that there was a whole, you know, business behind the, you know, the record label game, as it were.
Right, right.
And so to me, I came in, I remember specifically, I came in with a Poster Children record. And I remember thinking the song rules. It was a song called If You See K. And I thought this is like Superchunk. If there was a Superchunk record that was brand new, I'd be bringing in the Superchunk record. But there's not. This is the next best thing, and it's brand new, and it's hot, and people are loving it. And like, I want to play this. And he didn't want to play it. He's like, why would we play an independent band like that? And I'm like, why wouldn't we play an independent band? So to me, we kind of met halfway in between. Yeah. Like,
Were they, I mean, because this is still, we're talking 1992 here still.
91.
Right? No, or 91.
91 is when we signed on, yeah.
But, I mean, things in Seattle were kind of, we're starting to hit that, you know, upward trend, right?
Wasn't that when, I mean, when things
you know,
were just,
the sub pop thing
starting to kind of like take off a little bit?
And
you
that's
know?
The reason that we signed this station on. The Sub Pop Singles Club and the Seattle music scene. Mudhoney had already blown up.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Mudhoney with the college radio days. You know, I remember seeing Mudhoney in San Diego play for a couple thousand people and being there going, holy crap, Seattle is off the hook. Yeah. And I was also friends with the Soundgarden guys before I moved up. Matt Cameron was actually from San Diego as well. Mm. So I knew him before going up, and I kind of knew Eddie Vedder because he was also like, I played his old bands on my show in San Diego.
Right.
He was in a band called Bad Radio down there. So I used to play his stuff.
You're talking Pearl Jam, not Soundgarden.
Talked to both Matt Cameron from Soundgarden and Eddie Vedder from
Eddie
Pearl
Vedder.
Jam.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
So
okay.
both of those Sorry. People I kind of knew and played their records down in San Diego. Mm-hmm. So, things were already hot. That's the reason the station signed on is that they knew that there was something going on up here that was like definitely getting bigger. You know, and I had been a big fan of this Sub Pop Singles Club. I had all the 7-inches, and I was definitely into it. Did I know that Nirvana was going to blow up like that? Hell no. In fact, when I moved up, I thought the first band to make it out of this scene is going to be Mudhoney. It's going to be Mudhoney because of my experience outside of San Diego or outside of Seattle down in San Diego.
Right.
So, yeah,
because they were already kind of almost like a national act at that point.
Yeah. And it was growing. Right. Still, there was the thought. I mean, you know, radio stations don't always understand that. They don't always understand and embrace what's going on in the scene.
That's where I kind of wanted to push the conversation, too, because it seems like, you know, you being a young guy at that time and not to say that you're old now.
I'm pretty old. I've come to terms with it, dude. Totally come to terms with it.
But at that time, you know, you're the young guy, you're the music director, and you're looking at this stuff like, oh my God, you know, this is a gold mine up here, and we're, you know, people want to hear this stuff. This radio station can do great things if we can just, you know, push it in the right direction.
Yeah.
And then you got the old guys, the big company guys, looking down on you going, no, well, we want to kind of keep it within the realms of terrestrial radio.
It really wasn't big company guys, though, because they were guys that were savvy enough to know that I should be the guy running the music department.
Yeah,
they knew that much.
But they still wanted to have that control over it, right?
And specifically, I think it was just a moment that me and my boss, you know, there is an infrastructure that works.
Right.
You know, there is major labels pushing bands to radio. They come in, they're not understanding. So if you have 3 slots to add bands to your playlist, you know, and you add 2 independent bands and 1 major label band, there's going to be 4 major labels out there that are pissed off that they didn't get 2 of those slots.
Yeah.
And real pissed off to the point that they're calling my boss and
They're, you know, yanking stuff from
yanking
your roster
stuff.
And everything.
Absolutely.
Like that, right?
They're telling you,
it's all favors.
You know, F you. You're not going to get this. Yeah, you know, I had somebody say to me once, you'll learn how to play this game. And and I thought, how dare you? How dare you say that to me?
But dare you
know what?
Sully,
here's the thing. I did learn how to play the game. Yeah, but I learned how to play the game. I learned how to play the game so that it benefited a lot of people. I mean, you don't have to play the major label game. You got to have a conscience. You've got to have an effing conscience when you are programming radio. It's not all about playing the game.
Right.
It's about the balance of the two. You've got to play the bands. You've got to play the fucking Red Hot Chili Peppers, because if you don't play, you know, the Red Hot Chili Peppers have a fan base from hell, and you got to play them in heavy fucking rotation because people want to hear it and people are requesting it and buying it. But at the same time, you don't want to ignore Seaweed. Or whoever it is, you want to give the smaller bands an opportunity too. And that's, if anything, that's what pisses me off about radio today. It still can happen that way.
Right.
There might be people whose hands are quote unquote tied, that they are handed a playlist from an independent contractor or a consultant, you know, who hands them, here's a list of bands and this, you know, if you play these bands in this order, you will get this, you know, you will get this kind of rating.
Right.
A lot of companies have chickened out on letting the people that work for them make the decisions for them. Mm-hmm. The End is not one of those companies. The End can still do what we were doing back in the day.
Do you think it has, though?
I think there's been moments that it hasn't. I think the game has changed. And so, again, I think that it's like...
Why?
You know,
What? How does
we
the
were in
game
the
change?
Of a, we were in the middle of a... it was a musical revolution. Like, we were in the middle of... Every record that came across my desk was a Seattle band that could have been huge.
Right.
And we played a ton of them. There was a lot going on here at the time. There's not quite the same amount of music that's coming out of here that's blowing up on a national level. Let's hope that changes. Right. Let's hope Macklemore takes off. It's going to be somebody like Macklemore. You know, hopefully Alan Stone continues to get big. Pickwick gets a deal. You know, some of these bands, Rainwolf. Yeah, that kid could definitely bring the rock back to Seattle big way. You know, let's hope one of these people take off. But at the time, you got to remember, everybody was taking off. The screening trees were blown up.
It didn't matter who it was because record companies were coming to this city explicitly to sign bands.
You couldn't have made a bad decision back then.
Right.
It was all handed to you. And if it
There were some.
Yeah, sure there was. Ace of Base. I remember that.
Yeah.
Ace of Base. What was... not Third Eye Blind. They were all right for a while. What was the 7 Mary 3? Remember 7 Mary 3?
They were from Seattle?
Cumbersome. No, I'm talking about just records
that
we made mistakes with back in the day.
Yeah, I was going to say Queensryche, but...
We never played Queensryche.
Yeah. No. But that was just a mistake.
We did play
around.
Candlebox.
Yeah, that was kind of a mistake, too.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of got forced into that. There's an example of the corporate game working where we kind of had to give in to that. Oh, yeah. I held out on Candlebox, dude. I held out forever.
I was never a fan of Candlebox. And I still I still have friends that are like, when they did their little reunion thing recently, they were like, Candlebox is playing Roden. You should come to this show. I was like, fuck you.
Yeah.
No.
Here's the thing. They're the nicest people in the world. Once you get to know them.
Hey, man, I got nothing nothing against you. I was in a terrible band. I will never play my own music on my show.
What was your band called?
It's called The Huge.
The Huge?
Yeah. It's like, what kind of music
would
do
you play?
Would
you play
guitar? The Huge. You know?
Wait, do you play an MP3? I want to hear it. Do you have any
stuff? Yeah, I have some of it. I'll play it for you later.
Anyway, it was it's a different time. So, at the time, so everybody looks back on the amazing things we did. Mm-hmm. And it was groundbreaking. And I'm definitely appreciative of all of that. But it also happened at a time that the world was changing musically and we were smack dab in the middle of it.
It was ready for it.
So we were considered to be, you know, the beacon. Yeah. You know, and I ran into Novoselic not too long ago, and for the first time, because Nirvana was one of those bands that, like, was definitely fuck corporate radio.
Right.
Like, Nirvana was definitely that band. You know, they held on to, especially in the Northwest. In fact, I would find out that Kurt was doing interviews in other cities, and I was like, what the fuck? I can't get Kurt fucking Cobain on my show in his own city.
Yeah.
I've got his mom, his sister, his aunt, his freaking wife, his child.
Yeah.
I've got everybody else on the radio, and I can't get Kurt Cobain.
Yeah.
And it pissed me off, but it was the whole... It was the image, you know, that they were trying to, they were holding on to the whole, you know, in the Northwest.
Well, and this was Mecca. This was Mecca at that time, too, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, being in the Northwest, it was a whole different animal, you know, completely. And I just personally think that there's radio stations across the U.S. that could push the boundaries, you know, find that kid that was me. The hire that kid, the kid that's out in the scene that can see what's going on, that goes to the shows, that embraces the bands, who is willing to work, you know, 14 hours a day for 8 hours of pay, You know, find that frigging kid and let that kid start making some decisions. Right, let that kid start to develop something with that radio station.
Yeah.
I just don't see radio stations doing enough of that. And that
sucks.
Well,
do you think, I mean, do you think internet stuff like this, podcasts, I'm not saying this show in particular, yeah, of course, but, you know, podcasts and internet stations like the one that you're working for right now, Jet City Stream, which, yep, is really cool. I urge you guys to go and check it out. Like, you know, that's a huge sea change.
Oh, right? Yeah. Big time.
You know, I mean, are you seeing that? You're working for one right now. You still work for Slacker, right?
Yep.
Do you see, you know, are these bigger companies starting to take notice of this kind of stuff?
Hopefully.
Or what?
Hopefully.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was actually, you mentioned John Richards, and he and I were having a conversation about this. And it's
John Richards with KXP.
Yeah.
Of course.
And it's going to get to the point that major, you know, companies are starting to see what's going on in the underground. I mean,
right,
the KXP,
right,
like, you know, the amount of people they have listening to them internationally, their online presence is unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
And I had no idea until
it's crazy.
Like, John put me on, so I was on, like, right when I started at KXP. I was starting to do some shows on KXP.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a couple of 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. in the morning shows, and I'm thinking, what? You know, and I'm on there, and I'm tired at 12 midnight, and I'm thinking, so I made some comment on the air about being tired.
Oh, no.
And then all of a sudden, I think I yawned on the air. I said something. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm getting a little tired. It's midnight here. You know, did one of those. And
yeah,
I got an email from Japan. Of somebody was teaching school in Japan or grading papers. And they're like, dude, it's right at the end of my workday. It's 4 p.m. I'm grading papers. You're
making
keeping
me tired.
You're making me tired. I can't get through my day. And so I read that email on and explained how shocked I was to get an email response. And
that's
then from
funny.
All over the world, I opened a floodgate and
got
emails from all over the world. People were listening. And I'm like, you know what? Let's just do this. The next 2 hours is going to be all requests. So if you are somewhere other than Seattle right now, let's just do this. You request a song. I'm going to play it for you. I'm going to read your email on the air.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, Dubai, Japan, China, England, Hawaii, all over the place.
Right.
You know, and then I gave in and, you know, played some requests for, you know, New Jersey and Texas. And it's incredible. They're online, you know, listenership. So
it is changing. The internet has really opened this medium up.
Yeah,
it really has. And you know, we've got listeners all over the world as well. We're not on the same scale of something like KXP,
right?
You know, but it's amazing seeing where your, you know, where your web hits come from and where your downloads come from and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so it's a fantastic thing.
Yeah, it's all changing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know,
definitely. Well, Marco, we're hitting up the hour right here already.
We haven't even gotten to any of the good stuff yet.
I know. And here's what I'm going to say right now is that I want you to come back.
Okay.
If you can, maybe just I'll pay for a cab next
maybe
time.
Maybe we can just record this damn thing at Cairo.
Cairo.
Yeah.
Like closer to where you live.
Next to my house.
Yeah. We could possibly do that.
Oh, this has been fun, though, Aaron.
Yeah,
thanks for
thank you
me.
So much for coming on, and thanks for sharing your stories. And like I said, I would love to have you come back on. We'll call this part one
okay.
of the Marco Collins
that sounds
interview.
That sounds
and,
good.
And maybe in another month or so, we'll have part two.
Cool.
You know?
I'd love that.
So let's pimp your wares here really quick. Where can we find out more about you? Where can we find Jet City Stream? And
JetCityStream.com. I'm on 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. every weekday. And you should check out the show on Fridays. I do a Seattle Top 20 countdown. Like, I take the biggest selling Seattle bands.
Oh,
and
excellent.
Combine
that's
it
cool.
with the most requested. And I've always got guests on that show. You'll have to come by sometime for that.
I would love to, man.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic.
I had Chris Ballou on from the President's.
I listened to that
Casper Baby Pants last
week. I listened to that
week.
One, yeah. Yeah.
A lot of chitter chatter. Here's the nice thing about it, too.
Yeah,
as
yeah.
you know, you
yeah.
know, back in the day, like, or not even back in the day, now, it's all about, you know, PPM. You can't do a break that's over 45 seconds long. Chris and I talked for 10 minutes at a time about stuff, and it was awesome.
That was a fantastic interview. And we talked about that at Sasquatch, you and I, a little bit. You were really stoked about it and stuff. And
I was excited about that. We definitely pushed some boundaries with that one.
And it was super interesting. So if you're into, you know, the 90s scene, you know, and you want to hear a little bit about how the whole Cobain, like, family dynamics were and stuff, like, that's a great interview to listen to.
Thank you.
So go and check that out. JetCityStream.com, right?
Yep.
Excellent. And where can we find you on Twitter? What's your Twitter handle?
Not Marco Collins.
Not Marco Collins. Maybe we can get you to 35,001 followers.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. Thank you. I would like that. And then Facebook. Well, I just kind of ran into the problem with Facebook where I had a personal Facebook account and I've reached the 5,000 limit for friends.
Didn't they change that, though? They recently changed it, I think.
And raised it?
Yeah, I think they raised it.
I can't get any more friends.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Not one person.
Well, damn. I'm glad I got in there early.
Yeah. So now I had to create a... And I hate this shit. Like, I created
the page.
Yeah, the page. So go on and like my page. So it's just so lame.
Where are you on Facebook? Are you on Foursquare?
Yeah,
can we find you on Foursquare?
Fuck.
What's your Friendster handle?
Now, Friendster, I'm still down with. MySpace.
Marco, thank you so much, man. This
has been a blast, Aaron.
It's been a lot of fun talking with you.
Good luck.
Thank you. And you can find this show at www.error-raid.net. Also on the Edward R. Murrow award-winning website, mynorthwest.com. Go and check that out. We recently won the 2012 Best Radio Website in the Nation Award. Can you believe that?
Wow.
That's pretty amazing, right? Air Raid. The Air Raid podcast. Part of that shit? This is going to be over soon.
That's killer.
And follow us at Air Raid Net on Twitter. And like I said, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. This is Mud Honey. The song is called Touch Me, I'm Sick. And I hope you guys all have a good one. All right. We'll talk to you next week.